You're listening to Thoughts on Tech and Things. I'm Jason Michael Perry. My guest today is Brad Thompson, Senior Vice President of Technology at Target. Brad started at Target in 2005, over 20 years ago, and now he leads the teams behind much of how the company is putting AI to work for the people shopping and for the people running the business. Today, Brad and I are going to talk about how AI is changing the way we shop at one of the biggest retail giants and how the company is using AI internally. Brad, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So, Brad, to get started, I'm a technologist, and I'm often surprised at how fast these things creep up on us. And the act of buying and selling has gone through several transformations. It's probably weird to think about that, but early on in the dot-com world, we talk about this idea of brick and mortar to e-commerce, and now we're having another conversation about transformational commerce and how this is changing. And right now, the words that I'm hearing a lot about are agentic commerce, or I guess AI models making purchases for you. So I was hoping that you can just give me an idea of how Target is thinking about this moment, this big shift that's happening in commerce.
Yeah, I'll talk about the moment, but you know, to your point about sort of the arc of technology and retail, especially for consumers, I mean, retail has always been an industry that has been at the forefront of using technology. But it used to be sort of concentrated in like the core operations of a retailer, like supply chain or procurement or inventory management. But with e-commerce, that obviously started to change a lot, and technology became like really important to the way you bought things and the way you interacted with retailers whenever you chose to interact with them. The big one that happened after e-commerce was mobile. You know, obviously being able to purchase on your phone was really, really important. We do a significant amount of business now from our flagship apps and mobile web from people interacting on their phone. And then, you know, buy online, pick up in the store, all of the technology that's involved with like flexible fulfillment, all of that. But the biggest innovation, obviously, to come along in the last 5 years is agentic commerce, in terms of creating out of thin air like this new way to interact with a retailer, a new way to buy. And we're thinking about this moment as like it is the first inning of a, you know, a very long game. And I think the way that people are interacting with chat experiences to do research, like what we call top of funnel research on like what kind of solutions are out there to solve my problem. The fact that consumers and guests, our vernaculars, our customers we refer to as guests, that they are now like, rather than coming to your site or coming to Google and doing a keyword search on like a solution they're looking for, now they come and they're describing their problems and they're letting AI help them with possible solutions. And then it's only a hop, skip, and a jump to the retailer site to then be able to transact on that. So we think it's very, very early in the game, and we're in a learning moment. We're building some experiences. We're partnering with some of the major tech providers and frontier model providers. We want to be wherever the consumer is changing their behavior, because we want to be relevant to them in their lives. And our software developers, our engineers, our data scientists, our executives need to learn how fast consumer behavior is actually going to change, and make sure that we are kind of skating to where the puck's going. And I think the data would suggest that the consumer's changing pretty rapidly, and they're learning to trust AI experiences as a source of inspiration for the products that they may want to buy.
So there's a few things that you mentioned there that I would love to dig into a little bit more. The first is the, as you call them, your guests and the way that they discover. This has changed a lot. But before, I would go to a Target and walk through the store and I would discover new products. In the digital age, especially, a lot of this happens with search, like Google, other search engines as well. There is continuously this talk of this thing called Google Zero. This idea that the way that we're discovering products, that first part that you describe where someone goes out and says, I'm looking for X, that it's different. Are you finding that this is a changing habit for your guests, for your customers, in the way that they're discovering products online?
Yeah, so very much so. We see that on our own platform. So the way people enter searches into our search bar is definitely moving from keyword searches to more conversational searches. And I think the reason that's happening is because OpenAI and Google and Anthropic and others, Perplexity, they're training the consumer to think more conversational in terms of that interaction. And it actually definitely influences the way we build these kinds of solutions. So I'll give you an example. When we were working with OpenAI last fall on building the Target app inside ChatGPT, we were going to be the first mass retailer to have an application, a retail application in the environment. And it was very, very important to us that we designed the experience inside the app to be multi-category. Because when a guest describes an event that's happening in their life, they might say something like, I'm hosting movie night for the neighborhood. Help me plan that event. Give me some fun snacks that I can serve. What they've just described is a moment that's important to them. They want to be a good host for their neighborhood. What we hear is an opportunity to sell them cozy blankets, an opportunity to think through different kinds of snacks, maybe electronics. We hear multi-category in that, and AI is really good about taking signals from the consumer based on how they've described their problem, breaking that down into different kinds of intents and recommendations, and then we match our product catalog in order to serve up what we think would be really relevant products for them.
This is something that I had the opportunity to try. As you mentioned, this is in partnership with OpenAI, ChatGPT, and if you are a user of ChatGPT, you can install the Target app, and any conversation that you're having with your instance of ChatGPT by using an at symbol and typing Target, you can then loop Target into that conversation. And so I did something similar. I said, we're having a movie night, and asked some questions to ChatGPT about certain things, and up popped a Target-branded experience that allowed me to see different products and to view products in that cart. Or add them to my cart. I'm curious about this, if that's the way that you see this experience like moving to other platforms. And I know that you all happen to be founding partners in something called UCP, which is the Universal Commerce Protocol, which for the non-techie people, I'm hoping you can describe what this AI shopping protocol does and what this experience might look like.
Yeah. All right, there's a lot in that question. So OpenAI's approach to providing these kinds of experiences is to build out an app ecosystem that can be invoked either by saying like at Target, or they want their models to get good enough that it doesn't even need to, you don't even need to say like at Target. Instead, the models can infer that it would be useful for them to invoke certain applications based on the intent of your query or your question. Or your statement, that is definitely OpenAI's perspective. They want to build out that ecosystem. They want retailers to have a lot of control over what the commerce experience is. And, you know, I don't want to speak for them, but, you know, I think for somebody that's a relatively new company like OpenAI, they're a technology company, they're not a retailer. And there's a lot of complexities in retail. And I think at some point they just figured out it would be better to provide the ecosystem and that let retailers build out the app because we've already got a lot of those digital services in place from our own on-platform experiences. Others are taking a different approach. This is why I said I think it's early in the game, is because it's not yet known which one of those prevailing models are going to win. Or even if there will be a single winner, maybe there will be lots of different approaches that end up getting traction. But Google's approach, for example, or Microsoft's approach through Copilot, it's very different. So they're using something called, as you alluded to, UCP or Universal Commerce Protocol. What that is it's basically a protocol that allows the chat agents, so Gemini in this case, to be able to communicate and use tools and discover tools that help it do the job that's in front of them. So in this case, if I'm typing in a query about looking for the perfect hiking shoe in Gemini, Gemini has the ability, using Universal Commerce Protocol, to interact with several different retailers on their sites, discover the tools on those sites that allow it to navigate the product catalog, that allow it to interact with loyalty programs that may be in existence there, to be able to find the prices, and then be able to show that to the consumer inside Gemini and let them go ahead and complete the purchase inside of Gemini. So UCP is just a fancy way of saying there's agreed upon standards between the chat providers and the retailers on how Gemini will go about doing its job in order to transact. We wanted to be early. We wanted to learn as much as we could early on. And we have our own point of view on some of these things, but we also know that the frontier model providers also have points of view. So one of the best ways for us to potentially influence how these transactions were going to happen and or learn from, companies like Google was for us to actually be a part of developing UCP. And so we made sure that we had one of our distinguished engineers be on the advisory board for the protocol. And that gave us a seat at the table to be able to influence, how this is all taking shape.
You can see the Gemini changes, Gemini being Google's frontier model. But there is also now AI mode or AI search mode on Google Search. And if you toggle on that AI mode and start searching for products that are typically at Target, you will likely find that some of the product responses that bubble up are the Target responses that are coming through from UCP. Now, there's some other retailers who have been unhappy about the idea of not owning the shopping experience. The idea that now, when I transact with Target, I'm transacting potentially directly through Google or ChatGPT or Claude or Copilot with Microsoft, as you mentioned, versus going through the work that you've done to put together an amazing digital shopping experience. Is that something that you worry about, especially with loyalty programs and things that are tailored to keeping me coming back?
I think all retailers worry about that. But it's so early that for us, at least, and different retailers will reach their own conclusion about this. But for us, it's so early that we didn't want to cut off forums where our guests are interacting. If they are interacting on Google, and that's going to be a place where they're quite comfortable transacting, we needed to make sure that we were there and that our product assortment was going to be shoppable for them. And we knew that we would learn a whole lot through that experience that would influence the way we build our own on-platform agentic shopping assistant as well. So we just wanted to meet the consumer wherever they are. But absolutely, would I love all of those transactions to happen on Target.com and our mobile app? Of course. But at this point, it's naive to think that that's the way that's going to happen, especially early on. So sometimes one of our guests will come to Target.com. We want them to have a great conversational commerce experience. But sometimes they're going to be on Gemini. They're going to be on Claude. And we want to make sure that they can get what they need from us when they choose to do that.
That makes sense. So I want to change topics just a little bit. One of the things that I talk to a lot of technologists that are in your position about is this question of buy versus build. The AI has changed what we can build and what we can build so quickly. And I wonder that now in your position, as you're looking at decisions that you're making across platform decisions, software that maybe you would have used a SaaS platform or something before, if your decisions are starting to change with the ability to use something like OpenAI Codex or Claude Code as part of your engineering team?
So that's a big question. Because there are entire consultancy practices built on helping companies decide whether to build something or buy something when doing technology development. Let me answer it this way. We have we've always had, for the last 10 years, we've always had a fairly large technology team. And that team is made up of really talented software developers, really talented data scientists, product managers, UX designers. And we are what most would refer to as a buy shop. I mean, I'm sorry, a build shop. Let me be very clear, a build shop. We build a lot of our own stuff, especially the things that are going to be used directly by our guests. So almost everything on Target.com, all of our flagship app for mobile commerce, all of that is built by us, and we run that technology. Obviously, we host some of those services in the cloud, and we have cloud partners. But the actual working software, the algorithms, the decision models, all of that is ours. And there's lots of examples all over our technology portfolio where we've built that software. And we were doing that before coding companions came along. So even when you had to do it all by hand, all on your own, we just employed really, really great software developers to do that. And we did that because we felt like we wanted to have a lot of control over the experience that our guest was having when they interact with our technology. And we wanted to be able to pivot very quickly and not have to work through a vendor in order to get changes or to do some innovation. We compete against some of the largest and most innovative companies in the world. And it's only if we could control our own fate on some of those really important surfaces, could we, could we provide reliable and great technology to our guests. So we've been doing that for a while. With coding companions, with agentic coding, virtual coding agents, whatever language you want to use, the practice of building software is changing quite dramatically. In a lot of cases, you can build software much faster. And we are having active discussions and debates about what the role of the software developer is now in that model. It's still very important to us that the human developer is the decision maker on whether or not software ever gets into production. So that pull request is still reviewed and approved by the software engineer. But there's no question that using a virtual agent, a coding agent, you can write a lot more software, and you can write it much quicker. So it's in some ways never been easier to write software. In terms of like buying though, we don't build everything. We do buy some software. And I will say that all of this, in terms of like how we might interact with SaaS providers or more traditional on-premise solutions in our own data centers, the way we think about this now is that because software needs to have this notion of like agents more embedded into the workflows of the software, and because the model providers keep releasing just, they keep leapfrogging each other in terms of like how fast the capabilities are evolving. We don't want to get locked into any solution that we buy. We don't want to get locked in long term because the industry is just changing so much and so fast. And so I will say that what it has done is it's changed the how long we negotiate contracts when we do decide to buy something. And we kind of go more into a rent mentality. So we think we're not going to build it ourselves, so we're going to buy, but instead of like taking out the 30-year mortgage, we're going to do a year rental, okay, on this. And that allows us to learn from that provider. It allows us to take advantage of whoever it happens to be the leading industry solution at the time, but still give ourselves flexibility if somebody else comes along, or the economics of, tokens were to change dramatically, it allows us to adapt to that. Or it allows us to potentially build our own version of that 12, 18, 24 months from now.
We'll return to our conversation with Brad Thompson, Senior Vice President of Technology at Target, after a few messages from our sponsors. This is Thoughts on Tech and Things, and I'm Jason Michael Perry.
Got a baby on the way? It's time for Hoopty. I'm Roxy Aldrew, Baltimore-based inventor of Hoopty Hoops. NFC-enabled silicone rings that turn any baby bottle into a smart device. Just tap to sync your bottles with our free app. Hoopty tracks your bottles, calculates expiration, and sends reminders so you never waste a drop. Shop gethoopty.com. That's GETHOOPDEE.com and use the code THOUGHTS20 for 20% off.
Invested in AI but not seeing results? You're not alone. Perry Labs helps organizations figure out what's working and what's next. Start with our AI assessment at perrylabs.io.
You're listening to Thoughts on Tech and Things. I'm Jason Michael Perry. I'm speaking with Brad Thompson, Senior Vice President of Technology at Target. During our conversation, I asked him his perspective on the adoption of AI within retail giant Target. So another question, as you're talking about some of the things that you build and some of the more innovative products, one that I read about more recently is a chatbot that you rolled out to the retail folks to use in-store to help them answer questions of different sorts. I don't know if you could talk a little bit about this platform, how it works, and how it's being used within Target stores.
Yeah, we call it Store Companion. And it was actually one of the very first applications that we built that leveraged large language models as a key part of the application. It's gone through a number of iterations. The first version of it, which is, probably at least 2 years ago now, the first version of it we were real proud of at the time, but I look back on it now and I'm almost embarrassed probably at what it could do at the time compared to what's possible now. But what Store Companion is, if you go into a Target store, almost all the team members have like ruggedized personal devices, Zebra devices. And we have a number of applications on those devices that help the team member run the operations of the store. It could be everything from receiving the inventory through the back door on the truck. It could be doing price changes, whatever it is. There's literally hundreds of business processes that get executed inside of a Target store so that milk is on the shelf, priced right when you need to buy it. But because in retail you do have a fair amount of turnover of your workforce, or you have a lot of people who are working part time, or you may need to flex people into different parts of the store on a moment's notice, not everybody is an expert on the right way to do the process. If I have if a guest drops a bottle of Clorox in the aisle and I've got a bleach spill, there is a very specific way that bleach spill needs to be cleaned up in order for it to be safe for our guests that are in the store. So somebody may not be familiar with that. What Store Companion does is it uses RAG models. So we've taken all of the process documentation for how to run a store down to the step-by-step level, and we've essentially made it accessible to a large language model. And so a team member can just type in a question, like, how do I clean up a Clorox spill in the aisle? And the answer that it gets back is basically contextualized in Target knowledge with Target business processes. And it can work in multiple languages. So if you have a team member where English is not their first language or primary language, then they can interact with it in different languages. So we've been experimenting with it quite a bit. And innovating and iterating on it quite a bit. And, it's still going to have a long life ahead of it, and it's still going to get a lot better. But that's what Store Companion is.
Do you find that you're getting strong adoption from your retail workers? And are they using it, or do they find it to be a help?
Yeah, we get good feedback on the quality of the answers, for sure. And the leaders inside the Target stores will also use it quite a bit. And oftentimes, when a team member has a question about something, the leader will just say, "Have you asked that Store Companion?" Because again, you want to make sure that the process is being followed, as closely as it can be, based on the way our store operations team wants the activity to be done. But we think that over time, people keep coming into the workforce, the generation that's entering high school that may work part-time at a Target store, this sort of thing is going to be a little bit more easier for them to interact with. It's going to be more familiar, this kind of interaction. I think once we add voice to it, it'll become, you know, adoption of it will become even greater. When you don't have to be typing, you know, with your fingers or your thumbs in order to get a question answered.
Well, that makes sense. So there are a lot of other ways where I hear AI being used in retail stores, in organizations like yours. Some of the big places are customer service. I also hear a lot, you're a data scientist, so I imagine you probably look at things like predictive analytics and using predictive analytics to determine things like whether or not you have enough inventory. I read a piece that I think you partially worked on or you partially published on some of the ways that Target is using a combination of data, artificial intelligence, and other things to understand stock inventory and know when products are actually out of stock, even though or in stock when they're when they may be out of stock and vice versa. I don't know if you could talk a little bit about this thing, this platform that you've developed.
Sure. We call it on-shelf availability. Every retailer, you know, every large retailer where you've got, you know, a very large store and you're selling, you know, thousands of different products in the store, every retailer will tell you that out of stocks are a big problem. Keeping control and track of your inventory, where it is in the store, making sure that it's getting on the shelf, but also just knowing when it's out on the shelf, because it's a lot of square footage in a store and it's very expensive to have people just walking around constantly checking to see, is the shelf full or is it out? And one of the biggest problems that vexes the industry is when your system thinks that you have something on the shelf, but you actually don't. And the reason a system thinks it's on the shelf is because you know that it came in on a truck, you know it was placed on the shelf, and you don't have a point of sale transaction that shows that a guest bought it. So you logically conclude it's still on the shelf. The problem is guests pick those items up. They move around the store. Some people walk out the store with that item without ever paying for it, so it never goes through your point of sale system. Or sometimes what you thought was on the truck wasn't actually on the truck. So there's many, many ways that you can end up with an out of stock on the shelf and not know about it. And the problem with that is that if your system doesn't know about it, it never replenishes it, it never sends you more. So if I think I got five soccer balls on the shelf and I actually have zero, the system will never send more from the distribution center. So that zero just sits there and guest after guest that comes in looking for soccer balls is disappointed. They walk out to a competitor down the road or they go to Amazon or whatever. And so what we built was a way to look at massive amounts of data inside the store, look at the sales velocity of individual SKUs, and also look at the sales velocity of sister stores that might be in the industry and start to infer when we think we have an unknown out of stock. And then if that confidence level reaches a certain point where we think our inference is largely correct, we will then actually either automatically change the system and drop the on-hand quantity to zero, thus triggering a replenishment, or we will have a team member actually go to the soccer ball aisle and eyeball it and see, do I have any soccer balls here or not, and then adjust the system manually. It's a way to get goods flowing back in where the reality of what you have doesn't match what the system thinks you have.
And I'm going to try and say this to make sure that I understand what you're saying. There's a sales velocity on those soccer balls. They sell a certain amount on a regular basis, and suddenly that number drops to zero consistently for a week. Something's wrong. And from there, you can infer that something was wrong and make a decision or make a judgment call on they may need actually to replenish that thing in inventory, even though we think that there's inventory in that store. I know there's a lot more to it. That's my layman's way of explaining it.
That is a great explanation. It's a little bit more sophisticated than that, though, because there might be a logical reason why the sales velocity dips. It might be that we're actually out of stock upstream. Like our supplier doesn't have any more soccer balls to send us. So that's why we also look at sister stores in the area to see if they're seeing the same drop in velocity, because then you can infer this is a bigger problem with soccer balls, not a problem with this particular store. So you have to factor in those data signals as well.
That makes sense. Seasons, other things that are going to have an impact on the change of the...
Or you may even, the algorithm may even look further upstream to see if there's any orders pending for replenishment. And if not, that means that it's largely unaware that we have this issue. There's also, there's like, you know, this, I don't know, I can't remember what the term is, but basically a variety of data signals that the model will look at. And it will use different weightings on each of the data signals and then ultimately produce a confidence score on whether or not there's an out of stock that we don't know about.
Right. So I want to start to conclude on coming back to some of the ideas around autonomous shopping or agentic shopping and how this system is going to work. There's still a lot of questions about this, and I'm sure that you're, like you said, you're experimenting, you're doing this process, or you're getting into this early. One of the things that I hear the most often is how will payment happen in a truly agentic world? Should I give my credit card number, which the answer is no. Should I give my credit card number to ChatGPT and tell it go wild? Or is this something that you're working with your payment processing platforms to imagine? Maybe it's a Bitcoin or something like that. Or do you imagine this ultimately sending someone to the target shopping website to conclude a transaction?
So the way I think about this is, so agentic commerce right now doesn't necessarily mean autonomous shopping. So right now you can have a agentic interface where a human is directing ChatGPT to transact, you know, maybe transact on its behalf or instructing Gemini, but they're still hitting the buy button. Okay. So it has not been the purchasing has not been delegated yet, at least for Target. Okay. We still have humans totally in control. The consumers are totally in control of when they buy and they transact with us. And we would still count that as agentic commerce because it's an AI chat experience that where the source of the traffic is coming from, the source of the transaction. But of course the industry does look down the road at what would need to be true for a consumer to give more authority to a chat bot to transact on its behalf. And so we would be, it would be myopic for us not to imagine that world as well and prepare for it eventually. I want our technology to be good enough that we give our CEO or the head of Target.com the option to go in that direction should that we feel like the guest trusts AI enough to do that. I want to be ready for that world at some point. Payment, of course, is a really important part of that. And, you know, I happen to know that there are definitely payment providers that are actively imagining what sort of rules and protocols would have to be in place in order for them to feel comfortable that when a chatbot says, I have been given the authority to spend $35 on behalf of this guest, that that actually happened, that that authority was actually given. On the receiving end of that order for Target, if a chatbot shows up and says, I've been given the authority to buy this, and we actually create an order, I need to know that that authority was actually given. And so the industry will have to figure out what the standards are that we all agree to adhere to such that we build the right trust. And not only for consumers, they need to trust that something's not acting on its behalf and doing things it doesn't want them to do. You don't want to get the credit card bill at the end of the month and be like, whoa, what is this? But also retailers need to know before we put expensive inventory, you know, in a UPS truck and ship it to a guest that they actually wanted it and gave authority to a chatbot for that to happen. I think that that trust for a certain segment of the population will develop. I really do. We are, the trajectory is clear that the consumer is trusting AI more and more in retail. Adobe Analytics recently published a study showing the the actual trajectory of the use of agentic commerce, and it was really substantial. But in their latest survey, 39% of all American consumers say that they have used AI for online shopping, and 85% of them say that it improved their experience. And it is really hard to get 85% of Americans to agree on anything. And so I think that, you know, given that early experiences are proving positive, I think people will start to trust it more and more. The North Star that I give my team is, imagine a few years from now. Okay, so this is not today at all. But imagine a world in which a Target shopper who shops with us a lot, uses our mobile app, is in our loyalty program, imagine a world where they say into our app, Target, I'm hosting Taco Tuesday. I need you to send the ingredients for Taco Tuesday to my house by 5 p.m. Don't spend more than $35 and skip the guacamole because I already have avocados. And that's it. And then they go about their day. We need to build eventually a shopping assistant that can essentially take that directive from the guest, turn that into a multi-line order that completes the shopping mission for Taco Tuesday and delivers it to the house. We've been given clear parameters. They've delegated that to us, and we need to be able to execute that order. The industry is not there yet, but you can easily see how much friction that would remove from the shopping experience, where you know exactly what you want rather than building that cart item by item. Instead, you go to a retailer who you trust to act with integrity and with accuracy on that order. It removes a lot of friction from frequency type shopping trips. So it wouldn't be hard to imagine the industry sort of figuring out how to make that possible.
Brad, that's one of my dreams. I it's not there yet, but one of the things I try to do all the time is I take all of the recipes and the things I'm going to cook for the week, I drop it into ChatGPT or Claude, and then I take photos of my pantry and my fridge, and I'm like, figure out what I have, figure out what I don't have, and give me a list of the things I need to take to the grocery store to go shopping. And if it just took that next step and put that order in, and those groceries popped up on my doorstep, I'd be a very happy person.
Now, we're really getting theoretical here. But let's say you did that in ChatGPT and you said, have these things delivered. Then you have an agent-to-agent interaction where ChatGPT comes in and Target has an agent that answers the door when ChatGPT knocks. And then they have a negotiation about what is actually needed in order to fulfill that shopping mission. And maybe we even recommend some of our own brands for those items. But you can imagine an agent-to-agent interaction. Now, that's much more theoretical, probably a little bit farther out. But it won't be that long before those sorts of experiences will be possible. And there'll always be a segment of the population that's not interested in that, that feels like they're giving up too much control over the shopping experience. But there will be a segment of the population that'll be very interested in removing that friction, and they'll be quite happy to delegate some of that shopping authority.
I think the thing going into the future that excites me about agentic commerce and agent-to-agent experiences is that a lot of these things, a lot of the context for the things that you need or the shopping experiences that are going to happen already exists in different forms. We're starting to see this happen with Google and Apple and some of the work that they're doing on their mobile phone stacks and their platforms. But if your email has a list of the school supplies that you need for your kid, it's already there. If you just get a message that says that soccer camp starts next week and it has a list of the things that you need to bring to soccer camp, a lot of that context is there. And really what you want is a proactive experience where your agent, whatever that agent is, says, hey, these items are at Target and you just have to hit this button and go pick it up. And you know what? You can pick it up on the way home because it's a Target that's 5 minutes away, right? That's that futuristic experience of removing friction and making it feel part of the way that you interact.
I couldn't have said it better myself. One of the pillars of our strategy as a retailer is being available to our guests, providing a great guest experience in the moments that matter in their lives. And we're talking a lot about busy families right now as an archetype, as a segment of the consumer population that we want to show up for with great solutions. And, you know, there are times when busy families, they just don't have time to figure out how to build, you know, great lunches for the kid that's going to camp next week at the Y. And we want to create technology experiences that wherever they are on the spectrum of trusting AI or not, that are highly relevant to them.
So I have a closing question for you. So there is a story going out about another retailer that rolled out AI tools in customer service. And these customer service tools allowed them to take some of their customer service folks and put them on the retail floor, helping with design tasks and other activities. And there's consistently been this great conversation of what does this look like as we start to use AI more in our businesses, our organizations, and our retail establishments. So I'm wondering, have you started to think if AI takes more of a role in certain parts of Target's organization, what that looks like, or if it frees up places where you wish that you had the ability to put more human effort towards things? And I think this is a lot like you were talking about, you know, having humans as part of that development and programming process, looking at it as a way to expedite, to speed up, not necessarily replace.
Yeah, not necessarily replace is exactly right. The way we think about this is that we're focused on using AI in ways that help our team like absolutely do their best work. And a key part of that is providing a better guest experience in our stores or in our service centers, wherever we're interacting with the guest. We think that AI, it gives us lots of options. It helps our team move faster, make more informed decisions. But at the end of the day, it does not replace the importance of judgment, of creativity, of service, of connection. All of that is still going to remain important. So, for example, if technology can answer a routine question faster, if it can improve inventory visibility or give merchants better insights into trends, it then creates more space for the people-oriented work that matters: creativity, collaboration, problem solving, and serving guests. So I wasn't surprised. I know which retailer you're talking about. I wasn't surprised to read about that. And I think the way we're viewing AI is that it gives us all of those same options.
Brad Thompson, Senior Vice President of Technology at Target, thank you for joining the show.
It was truly my pleasure. Thanks for the thoughtful conversation.
All right, folks, that's Thoughts on Tech and Things for the week. If you have any ideas for our next show, let us know your thoughts by leaving a message on the WYPR app, calling 410-735-1616, or find me at jasonandperry.com. Thank you to the team at WYPR, our producer, Sam Bermes-Dawes, and Perry Labs Head of Operations and Marketing, Myrna Martinez. New episodes drop every other week. I'm Jason Michael Perry. This is Thoughts on Tech and Things, and I will see you next time.